The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live.
The choice is between normal,
Natalie Cheel,
or crazy.
Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Normal. I choose crazy over normal any day. Crazy Nat here. Morning. Happy Tuesday. It's the 5th of March, 2024. I'm Natalie Cheel. This is Open Line. Rick and Gemma joining me shortly. We've also got Lee Harris and Ben from Chasing Descent to come. And let's kick off early. We've got Jaguar. This is interesting. Does anybody remember like Jaguar being like the car that everybody wanted? My dad actually had an E-Type Jag when he was younger, and he did sell it in the end in order apparently to buy a house and put a roof over my head, but he didn't want to. So I guess that should show something. But yeah, Jaguar are only going to build SUVs from now on. They're getting rid of saloons and sports cars, and they're going to go all electric vehicle, the whole line. No petrol, no diesel. I read the comments on the Daily Mail article. This is what the top one said. No longer Jaguar then. A countdown to the end of Jaguar. It's just started. Probably the end of Jaguar and Britain. What do we think, Rick? Have they made a decision? Dying a death? Game over.
Absolutely game over. You talk about the Jag being the prestige, well, a prestige car brand. I don't know if you remember the band Madness back in the 1980s, but they had a hit, "I Like Driving in My Car." It's not quite a Jaguar. That enshrined Jaguars into people's minds for a very, very long time. I honestly and truly, Natalie, without being dramatic about this, because you know I'm not in the slightest way dramatic whenever I'm delivering my points, but I really do think this is game over for Jaguar. Not to build petrol cars, not to build diesel, not to build cars, period. They're just going to build SUVs, electric SUVs. I can't think of a worse move for a car manufacturer to make. It's literally the car version of, kamikaze bomber. So crazy.
It's
crazy. I've seen some Jags around. You don't see too many of them around. They're usually petrol cars, big V8 cars, supercharged cars. That was the selling point for Jags. Very fast, very slick, very well put together. The SUVs, not so much. So to get away with the one thing that they were maybe selling, which was high engine capacity V8 petrol cars, and go to SUV electric only. Insane. Literally, it's insanity.
So this is a quote from them. Our UK production facilities are being reconfigured to produce JLR's next generation electric models. This includes the stampings operation at Castle Bromwich, which will be expanded to manufacture body panels for all our brands. Jaguar will begin an exciting new era as a pure electric modern luxury brand, with production commencing at our Sully Hill facility from 2025. Goodbye, Jaguar. I just can't see, the type of clients, how the old style boy racer, the people that, they truly love cars. I can't see it. And we've had Bernie on the show before. He was a big fan of cars. He bought the electric vehicle, soon got rid of it. I mean, even if people do buy them, are they going to keep them when they realise they're not as fun to drive? That's what everyone used to say. I'm not a big fan of driving, but that's what people say to me who are. A car, you want to feel it. It's about how it drives as well. Do you think they'll be fun to drive, these new Jaguar electric vehicles?
Well, they've all got this hyperspeed mode where you put the foot down and you can go from 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. But if you're driving a 3-ton vehicle, that's a liability. That's dangerous at the best of times. And when are you ever really going to get to do that without breaking the law? The other thing is the demographic for the people that would have bought Jaguars actually, by and large, would have been older, retired folk with a few quid in their pocket. They wanted to show off and go one up on their neighbors. So, there's a pecking order of cars. You've got your little Skodas and Fiats and Peugeots down at the bottom line, and then you can gravitate to a Volkswagen if you've got a few more quid, and then you can go to an Audi if you're really wealthy, and then you can maybe upgrade to a Merc or a BM. But if you really want to show off to your neighbors, you can buy yourself a Jag. That's one step below a Porsche. So if you've got Jag your money, thing. You're sitting somewhere between a high-end BMW and a Porsche. You're not quite rich enough to buy a Porsche, but you're not quite poor enough to be seen slumming it around in a BMW 3 Series. So yeah, I think their target market of oldies, old crusties, I don't know, they maybe only go to the shops. So maybe it's a fantastic move. We'll be eating humble pie about this one in a year, but
we'll see.
Somehow not like, well, I don't think so.
On your scale, I'd like to say I have a 1.1 automatic Hyundai, so I'm right down at the bottom of the scale. But at least I'm not worried about my end, the lithium battery or whatever it is catching fire. So there's that. So at least it gets me from A to B, which is the main thing. But we're going to take a quick pause now on today's news talk and get Gemma's view.
Getting straight to the facts.
Enough with the lies. We need facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Morning, Gemma. You're gonna run out and get down the Jaguar showroom and have a look?
Well, I rather wonder how much this has got to do with their parent company, because I think a lot of people still think Jaguar is owned by Ford, but it's not. It's actually owned by Tata Motors. And this is part of the big Tata Corporation that obviously, you know, they've got their tentacles in shipping and all kinds of things. And a huge swathe of the automotive industry is run by them. Tata Steel, they're huge, aren't they? And when you're that big as a corporation, you know, Jaguar is not the boss of Jaguar. Tata is the boss of Jaguar. So I wonder what they've been saying, you know, the corporate billionaires with their little kind of, you know, UN counterparts and little global puppets saying, we know you got to do this. It's as simple as that. Yeah. You know, we want to fulfill this agenda and we're going to use our companies to do it. That's what I think this is. I think it's bigger than just Jaguar saying we're following a trend. I think it's Jaguar absolutely doing what they're told by their billionaire owners.
And
could
also
it be the end of British? Another classic British product, Natalie. Jag is a quintessentially Brit car, you know, an affluent Brit car. Could this be another eraser taken to Britishness, maybe? Or am I looking too far into that by Tata Steel or foreign owners' masks?
I see it as a massive gamble because the sales of electric vehicles everywhere are plummeting. They're not going the way they should do. So as Gemma rightly pointed out, I think they've basically been told this might be our only way of kind of pushing the electric vehicle. Let's get people trying to buy the Jag, but it might not work. Sales might go down and it might be the end of Jag. So let's hope everybody does what we think and they'll leave it. Jaguar will go. It will be their own fault and it will be the sale, you know, the downfall of the electric vehicle, Gemma.
Yeah, I mean, if people vote with their feet on this one, it is a two-fingered salute to the corporate billionaires who are trying to tell us what to do because the politicians have failed. So we'll try and bring it in the back door by consumerism, which is the other biggest influencer on the planet, isn't it? But if people are seeing through both of those agendas, then yeah, it's not going to work. And pushback is our weapon. Saying no, voting with our wallets is the weapon. It's very interesting, Rick, though. Will people be able to break out of that status trap? Because Jaguar is part of that status trap. You know, have you got a BMW? Have you got a Jag? One of the senior news presenters I used to work with in my old life was absolutely over the moon after his divorce because he went out and bought a diesel Jag and he was like, oh, would anybody like to have a trip in my Jag, you know, heated seats and all of that, because people love that one-upmanship. Whether or not people have kind of had enough of that is the key to, as to whether or not this will sink or swim. You know, billionaire corporations don't kind of make these types of rules unless they think they've got a hope in hell of them, you know, working. Nobody likes to lose money. So we'll have to see. I think ego plays a big part in stories like this, actually.
It does, but I know you've got another story for us. I don't think the average person, Gemma, is going to be able to be going out at the moment and buying that electric Jag, are they?
No, but that's not the clientele that Jaguar has ever chased. No. They want those kind of top AB kind of demographics of the UK or in the world. They want status-driven customers driving a status-driven product. That will be the issue. Will people let go of that aspect? And then they will say, I'm not having an EV, even if it is a Jag. Not doing it. Yeah. That's where we'll see. So it's a story to come back to, isn't it? And see how it goes. My 2025 is not that far away now. So we know it's one to return to.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about money and what people have, you've got another story for us, don't you, Gemma?
Yeah, well, this is happening right now. And it's a story that, you know, you guys have covered extensively even before I arrived here at TNT. And it is about, you know, council spending and councils that have gone bankrupt. So today, right now in the council chamber, councillors at Birmingham City Council are voting on a huge package of cuts and tax increases for the local population because, of course, they've issued a 114 section order and they've effectively declared bankruptcy. One of the main reasons they did declare bankruptcy was the £815 million equal pay settlement that they had to match, and they've been left with no money. So today, the councillors in Birmingham are going to vote on a huge package of measures. The first one, which people in Birmingham absolutely are up in arms about, is a 21% increase in council tax. That's the local charge here in the UK, levied ostensibly to pay for things like the potholes in the roads, the collecting of the rubbish, maintaining street lighting, all the things that are local. So they're going to increase that by 21%, which for some households will be a massive squeeze. But then they're also saying in the same breath, they're not going to collect the bins. They're not going to have the lights on at night. And they're not going to amend the potholes because they can't afford it. They're now going to collect the bins fortnightly. That's one of the measures they're proposing. They're going to turn off or dim streetlights at night, and potholes and road maintenance, well, you can forget it at the moment. They're also talking about slashing adult social care by 24 million and children and young people's care by 50 million. Now, the leader of the council said he's apologized for all of this. He said they're aware it's financial mismanagement, but they have to do everything they can to drag themselves out of this hole. People in Birmingham now are beginning to speak out and saying how angry they are that they are paying for these considerable multi-million billion pound failings of their local authority, and many people rumbling that they don't want to pay and will not pay a council tax increase of that much. Nottingham, another city council that was declared itself bankrupt, they voted on a package of measures yesterday in their council chambers, and jobs, social care, youth services have all been cut, and their council tax will go up by 5%. On the subject of jobs as well, it's likely today, if Birmingham votes these measures through, 600 council workers are likely to lose their jobs if this multi-million pound savings plan, which you could argue could have been averted.
Yeah, what do you make of this one, Rick?
Well, this 10% per year for the next 2 years, I think there's a cap at the minute, generally speaking, of 5%, where they can't raise it more than 5% unless they take special action to do it, which in this case, Birmingham have. Mismanagement going on for a long time, putting the prices up, not the fault of the people and the residents of Birmingham, but yet, of course, they're the ones left carrying the tab for this. And I think it's ridiculous that even with the extra payments that they're going to be making every month towards their council tax, they're actually getting reduced services. So this business of collecting the bins once a fortnight, I don't know what it's like where you guys live, but we have alternate bin connections.
Yes,
so
we
have our household waste this week, next week, it's our recyclables. If you do all that business, your garden waste, and then they take it 2 weeks about. So it used to be we had weekly bin collections. Everything went in the bin. It got emptied weekly. Now some people have four or five bins and you have to juggle which bin you leave out. But I don't know if they're going to 2 weekly bin collections for each one. So it's going to be 4 weeks before some of the bins are emptied. Turning the streetlights down to save electricity. That's crazy. And not the big one, not mending the potholes. I think that's the biggest bugbear of all, because many motorists are getting their wheels wrecked, their cars wrecked. I've seen a few horrific pothole incidents recently where I live, where cars have been completely totaled. So they're not even going to fix the potholes for all that extra money. I would be incensed if I lived in Birmingham.
Do you know what I reckon they'll do? They'll just get somebody out with a spray. That's what they do in Reading. They just go around with white spray and put a circle around the potholes, but they never fix them. That's what they do. That's how you solve the pothole problem, white spray. But Craig Abar says, Birmingham, pay a lot more for less services. Welcome to the new world order. It is absolutely disgraceful. I don't think people are going to complain too much. If you really have to put the money up, but you're getting a better service, I think at least that makes sense. But I think it's going to happen to all councils, Gemma, across the country. All council taxes is going to rise. And I think we're going to get less and less and less. As Rick rightly points out, it wouldn't surprise me if bins get started even getting taken like once a month at some places. They're like, we can't afford to pay the binmen. Everything will get collected now once a month. And what can we do? This isn't right. It isn't right for anybody across the country. But I guess we all have to stand up at some point and actually argue with them about it, because otherwise they're just going to take our money, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I do think this is a picture that is reflective of the way all councils are going. Certainly, you know, Rick, you talk about a lot where you live, and I think that's the best example, you know, your own lived experience. My council tax is going up by 5%. I was chatting to the bin man there last week, and they're like, oh, we're not going to come around as much anymore. They're talking about once a fortnight or once a month. But if you think about the implications of that, you know, that's rubbish piling up literally in the streets or in your back garden, or people would just take matters into their own hand and try and take it to the local tip. Well, if you've got 10,000 people or turning up to the local tip at the weekend just to dump their refuse, the local tip will turn into a landfill. You know, where this is a problem, you know, where will you shift literally the crap? So it's happening everywhere. And you know, we're not renowned for our radicalness or our standing up to the system, but the last 4 years has changed that. So I do know about the burgeoning resistance movement of not paying council tax or withholding council tax. I know a few people anecdotally where I live that are doing that and have done that for quite some time before 2020, actually. I'm not advocating it, but I can see the kind of anger that people feel, you know, well, what am I getting for this now? Where's the money going? I, you know, and a lot of people just simply can't afford it. It is as simple as that. You've raised that before, Natalie, and I completely agree. I don't know where this will go, but I think we've got two councils in the space of 24 hours with huge, 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 devastating, people are saying, these cuts for vulnerable people, and devastating just for, you know, day-to-day living. Where's your rubbish going to go? You know, it all adds to the general stress and malaise, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And I think the only people that are kind of rubbing their hands together are pest control. I can see a lot more rats coming out around the country, and pest control are probably the only people that are going to be actually making money off this disgusting thing that all councils are doing. But thank you for bringing the story to us, Gemma. We got Lee Harris to come now at today's News Talk after the break.
TNT's Jeremy Nell.
A gentleman in the UK who was falsely accused of rape, and he spent 4 years behind bars. Now, John, this is a tricky situation. You're talking about a very serious crime here. The problem is that the establishment sides with women, which is why he ended up in jail. Yeah. But he didn't rape her. So I've got a question for you. What should happen to those women?
Yeah, I felt very, very strongly, Jeremy, because and this is why, one reason why I quit the teaching profession. I had 20 years as a school teacher. When this girl accused me, it was all vindictive. It was kind of get you back for you know, putting her in a place kind of thing. She couldn't accept discipline. The retaliation, it cost me a year without pay as a school teacher. I was on, you know, unemployed. And effectively I lost my career in the community. I had to move to a different part of the country.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
It sounds pretty good.
It sounds real, dude.
Not bad, huh?
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, indeed, it is TNT Radio, and we're very happy to be joined on the show now by none other than Lee Harris. And just before he connected there, he was getting schooled in the TNT way of doing things, because we have a certain way to do things, and now he knows how to do those things. So, Lee, anyway, that's a little off-camera in-joke between us. Political commentator, conservative, a Brexiteer. You also have a YouTube channel, Lee Harris Media, and you can be found on the Twitter platform at Addicted the News. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I hope you're both well.
Yeah, we are. We're scratching our heads, Lee. We've got little bald spots at the top of our heads because Nat and I are perpetually scratching our domes, trying to make sense of what's going on in the world at the minute. One story in which we're trying to get our heads around is this double standards that seems to apply in everything in life at the minute. There's double standards apply to certain groups, not the other groups. They apply to certain protected groups, not the other groups. We're seeing it this week with regards to jail sentences handed out to one guy for stickering 2 years. Another guy, part of a sexual assault gang, gets 180 hours community service. But it goes further than that. You highlighted yesterday very well that this double standard in reporting to Ofcom and the penalties that are doled out doesn't seem to be equal measures either. For example, in 2019, Joe Brand, the comedian in inverted commas, joked about throwing acid over Nigel Farage on the BBC. No action was taken. 2020, Sophie Duker joked about killing white people on the BBC. No further action. Miriam Marigold said she wanted Boris Johnson to die of COVID. No further action. And old Laza Fox makes a misogynistic comment. He breaks Ofcom rules and they get out the big knuckle wrapper and give him a good old spanking with it. So what's with the double standards in Ofcom and what you can and can't say on media?
It's just ridiculous. You summed it up nicely there. I think in the UK, we're suffering from two-tier politics, two-tier policing, two-tier judiciary, and now we have two-tier Ofcom. It seems to have infected every single one of our most important institutions in the UK. But as you know, this is an incident that happened in September 2023. Lawrence Fox made some controversial comments about Ava Evans, a female journalist, during an episode of Dan Wooten's Tonight Show on GB News. The conversation between Dan and Lawrence was in response to an earlier panel discussion on BBC Politics Live, where Ava Evans appeared to play down male suicide. A fellow guest suggested there should be a minister for men to tackle male suicide, but she said that this feeds into a culture war a little bit. I actually watched the show and it wasn't a very pleasant thing for her to say about male suicide. And that's what Lawrence Fox was aggravated about. Now, so after the episode, there was some controversial comments made by Lawrence Fox. And after the episode, as you can imagine, the pearl-clutching, woke, left outrage merchants were exploding with rage on social media. And, you know, Dan Wooten and Lawrence Fox both apologised and were both immediately suspended. Lawrence was fired about a month later, and Dan Wooten remains suspended to this day. Now, the episode prompted 8,867 complaints to Ofcom, who then ran a 4 or 5 month investigation and just announced yesterday that the show broke broadcasting guidelines. And in a statement, they said an Ofcom investigation today has concluded that an episode of Dan Wooten Tonight on GB News broke broadcasting rules designed to protect viewers from offensive content. Now, I have a couple of issues with this, probably like most people. Firstly, the statement from Ofcom is ridiculous. The rules are designed to protect viewers from offensive content. I mean, come on. Just a reminder, this was broadcast well after The Watershed. It's a great show, well known for strong opinions and fiery debate from all sides. And importantly, it's aimed at adults. So it's more than a bit patronising to say that we need protecting I would actually argue that we need protecting more from some of the dodgy output that you get on Channel 4. But they're the good guys, so they get a free pass. But secondly, and more importantly, this is probably a bit more what you're discussing, whether you agree or disagree with this most recent ruling, it's abundantly clear Ofcom is biased and not fit for purpose. Mm-hmm. And as you've listed off the things that I was going to mention. Sorry, Karen.
Can I just say, Lee, I'm no fan of Lawrence Fox personally. And I actually thought his comments as a woman, I thought they were pretty awful. But do you know what? He can say them. You know, I mean, he basically said about the lady, rather than argue about what she'd said, he said, who would want to sleep with that? So he made the argument about whether a woman is sexually attractive and whether he'd like to go to bed with her. Personally, I think that's a pretty awful thing to do. But you know what? It's just reflective on him. I'm not offended. I don't think it's misogynistic. I think it looks makes Lawrence Fox look like an absolute brat himself. And you know what? Mm. Let people do it. Let people talk. Make them look bad is my opinion. But how is that worse than the other things that you said about people actually inciting hatred onto other people, Rick? So I just wanted to get my penny's worth in there quickly.
No, well said. And as well, just picking up on what Lee has also pointed out there, if whether you love Lawrence and Dan or you hate them or you agree with what they say or you don't agree what they say, this isn't about them and it's not about what they said. It's about the application of censorship or Ofcom guidance equally to every party. So if you're going to come down hard on Lawrence Fox and Dan Wooten or whoever it happens to be, then you should come down equally hard on everybody, for example, that makes comments about throwing acid on someone, which is a stupid thing to say, equally daft thing to say, or wishing someone dead. You know, you may not like people, but for me, wishing people dead, it usually comes back on yourself in a bad way. So I tend to avoid things like that. But yet, there's a lot of other people are happy to say it. And you know what? That's their freedom of speech right to do it. But I think the application needs to be applied equally to all. Otherwise, it makes a mockery of the so-called regulator, which is called Ofcom. And they are a farce, as far as I can see at the minute.
I mean, I agree. I Lawrence said himself that his comments weren't a reflection of himself. And I agree. It was a distasteful comment. I think he himself admits he probably shouldn't have said it. But you nailed it, Rick. The double standards are absolutely eye-watering. You know, it seems if you're on the left, you get a free pass. And if you're on the right, they throw the book at you. If you do not have left-wing opinions, the system is genuinely rigged against you. You know, I get the feeling that if Lawrence and Dan were lefties and this incident that happened on Channel 4, just like all the, in my view, worse incidents that you just listed that have happened before, and say, for example, they were attacking Nigel Farage, you can guarantee the ruling would have been no further action, just like the rest of them. But Ofcom should be scrapped, in my view. I'm not saying we shouldn't have any regulators. I'm saying that they should scrap it and build it up again, because they make it up as they go along. There's no consistency. There's no attempt to administer any clear guidelines. They're just being guided by whatever they think popular opinion is at the time. And you've got BBC, Sky News, Channel 4, who all claim to be impartial, but they've been spewing left-wing, anti-Tory, Brexit-hating propaganda for years, and Ofcom barely bat an eyelid. And there's a reason for this, in my view. If you look at Ofcom's board and committees, they are loaded with overpaid ex-BBC staffers. And the chair was selected by none other than Sue Gray, the infamous ex-civil servant who moved over to the Labour Party and was suspected of colluding with Keir Starmer to bring down Boris Johnson. But GB News is growing fast and it's outpacing other main channels at various points in the day, and they cannot stand it. And in my opinion, they are gunning for GB News. Like you said, the double standards are very, very obvious to people. The reason I started Twitter, the reason I went onto social media in the first place, is because of my perceived bias during the Brexit referendum. BBC were awful, and I hadn't even made my mind up on Brexit at that time. But one thing was staggeringly obvious, is I couldn't get a representation from Leave voters. Why was it good to leave the European Union, for example? And that frustrated me and made me actually look into the Leave argument more. Eventually, I ended up voting Leave. But that has been, we've had bias and an agenda-driven mainstream media in the UK now, in my view, since at least 2016, but it's become a lot more prevalent. And this is just another symptom of it. Like I said, two-tier politics.
The trajectory that it's on, Lee, is not good, and it's patently on display for all to see here, but yet it continues unabated. So I agree, Ofcom, I do not think are fit for purpose. Maybe something is needed there. The board needs to be wiped clean and them to be replaced. Whether that happens or not, only time will tell. But we've got to take a pause now. We've got to take some headline breaks. I just want to thank you for coming on, jumping on, giving us your honest opinions and thoughts on this particular matter. Lee Harris, check him out at Addicted Who News, N-E-W-Z on X, or Lee Harris Media on YouTube. And yeah, we've got to take a little break. We'll be back afterwards with Ben from Chasing Dissent. So please don't go away. This is TNT.
What do they want?
Exciting news.
Brace yourself.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylant here with your TNT headlines. Australia's Prime Minister has been referred to the International Criminal Court, accused of being an accessory to Israel's genocide in Gaza. Serbia says the war in Ukraine's only set to worsen, warning it's only a matter of time before Western troops are deployed to the country. And former Twitter executives who lost their jobs after Elon Musk bought the social media site are now suing the billionaire, claiming he owes them over $100 million in unpaid severance.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We are back. And just looking on the online chat, someone said to me, Natalie, you didn't listen to the whole Lawrence Fox debate. I did. I watched the whole show. I was saying that I personally disagree with lowering yourself to talking about sleeping with someone in a political debate. That's my opinion. But Lawrence Fox is absolutely free to say what he likes, and I am free to make a judgment on it. And I think that's how freedom of choice and freedom of speech works. You can say what you like and people will judge you for it. But I'm not asking for him to be cancelled. But that's just how I see it. We can't all agree on everything, otherwise the world would be a very boring place. And that's why we are here on today's News Talk to give our opinions. And we have back to the show the one, the only, the legend that is Ben from Chasing Dissent. And we will be talking to him today about France. What's going on there? We've got a constitution change. Ben, can you let us know all about it?
Well, yes and no, because it really is such a blinking non-story. So France have, and the mainstream media have obviously lauded, that France have decided to constitutionally amend their constitution to allow abortion to become a right. And now, I don't even want to get into the argument of whether or not abortion is right or wrong. I don't think that's the argument we need to make here. What I want to say is this. If you've ever been to France, and I spend a lot of time in France, nobody cares about this. It's such an absolute non-issue. And you can see that just by looking when they brought it to Parliament for a vote in their special vote yesterday. We have 784 and 72 against. Mm-hmm. This is all about political posturing. Emmanuel Macron is looking at the European parliamentary elections, which are going to occur in just a few months' time. And he's looking at the polls and he's seeing the trajectory shift towards the right. National Action, I think they're called now, formerly Front National, are going to take the lead in that. And he's thinking, what can I do to garner a few more votes? And so he's done this and he's saying, oh, in response to Roe v. Wade being rolled back in the United States a couple of years ago, we're going to make sure it's a woman's absolute right to have an abortion. We're going to enshrine it in the Constitution. But like I said, nobody in France realistically cares about this. And all you have to do is look at the fact that Marine Le Pen herself stood up and voted with Emmanuel Macron on this. Nobody cares. I don't think this is the win that he thinks it is. I think he has done this just to garner some headlines. And I think what makes it even more obvious is the fact that he's inviting women to come and join us on International Women's Day to see it enshrined. This is all about vote garnering. It is nothing to do with women. 80% of the population in France would wholeheartedly agree that a woman's right to an abortion is a woman's right to an abortion. And yet here we are seeing it plastered over the news like it's something that it clearly isn't.
Yep, I would absolutely agree, Ben. And even Le Pen says, we will vote to include this in the Constitution because we have no problem with it. No one is putting the right of abortion at risk in France. This is the national rally who are against them. It's almost like they're coming out as if to say, hold on a minute, this was never in question. How are you putting this forward as a political play? And I think we're going to see this across the board globally with a lot of the elections coming up, aren't we? Putting things in the mainstream media, trying to act like they're doing things on our behalf, when really it's nothing but political point scoring, Ben.
You're absolutely right. And like I said, I spend a lot of time in France. And what I will say is this: all of my French friends are extremely liberal people. They really have. We've never had this discussion. And like I say, a lot of time. And I've got a fair few friends over there. We've never even had this discussion because it's just not on the tips of their tongues and it's just not on their minds. It's something that the French have believed is a right anyway. It doesn't need to be enshrined into the Constitution because it's just baked into the psyche over there. It's not an issue. It's a complete non-issue. But Emmanuel Macron, he's at this point grasping at straws. He almost got beat by Marine Le Pen a couple of years ago in the last presidential election. If she runs again, I'm pretty certain he will be beat, or whoever stands in his place will be beat by Marine Le Pen in the next presidential election in about 3 years' time. And we're going to see that's the case when we see Macron's party absolutely decimated in the European elections coming up. I don't think that he understands why people are angry at him. And he's just throwing anything at the wall, hoping it sticks, and saying, vote for me. Look, I care about the woman. Yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you're whose accent's better.
Well, by the way,
I was going to say, Rick, can you try, please? Because I know you like an accent. Can you see if you can outdo
Ben on the French
accent?
I am Emmanuel Macron, and I like very old women. I like old women, maybe 70 years plus. I don't like those young women. Yeah, so that's my Emmanuel Macron impression.
I have point, a lot in common with Justin Trudeau.
Yeah, he's a dodgy boy too. And actually, Natalie and I had a little offer wager here that we reckon both of those guys would get married eventually. We reckon that Trudeau left his wife, Emmanuel Macron, you know, his wife must be on the cusp of death. She's a geriatric. So I reckon when she pops her clogs, they're going to get married together, possibly in 2025. But anyway, good point that you make, by the way. A super serious topic, of course. And as you rightly said, this isn't getting into the ins and outs of whether or not abortion is good or bad thing, but it's to do with political point scoring. Emmanuel Macron doesn't give a damn about women's rights. He doesn't give a damn about the rights of babies in their mother's womb. All he's trying to do is political point score here. It's pathetic. And one of the most pathetic things about the majority of politicians is they will take any topic at all that they think will win the votes. And you can see right through them. You can see right through them that they're only playing to a certain element of the political field. And that's exactly what Macron's doing. And another point that I want to make too is this business about the Constitution, the French Constitution. Yeah. These words sound fantastic. We're enshrining it in the French Constitution. It's worth noting here as well that since the Constitution was enacted in 1958, it's been amended 17 times. So, okay, you're enshrining it in the Constitution, but it could be unenshrined at a later date down the line. It doesn't mean it's chipped into tables of stone and marble and they're going to be set up and never be amended. This could all change again. Maybe if the next government wants to score some points, they can unenshrine it from the Constitution. It's all very fickle.
Rick, can I just quickly add to that before putting it back to Ben, that we're talking about a constitution. So for me, in order for Macron to have changed that, there should have at least been some type of referendum. It seems to me he just woke up one morning and thought, I'm going to enshrine the constitution with something that I believe.
Sounds great.
You know, do you know what I mean? Like, if you're going to do that, surely shouldn't it be at least ask the public, you know, what their view on abortion might be? No, but Macron knows, doesn't he? He can just change like an emergency law overnight. It makes me uncomfortable reading it, Ben. You know, just a politician being able to do something overnight without asking the public.
Well, at least he did ask the House. So there was a vote in. But it wasn't a vote of the people, as you say. But he didn't just wake up and sort of amend the Constitution. But even if he had done, you know, the answer would have been exactly the same, because 80% of people, like I said, in France already believe that a woman's right to have an abortion is a woman's right. And it's just such a non-issue because it's already a service that is available. It's not like he's changing the law to make something available that previously wasn't. So what's going on here except for political posturing? He knows his party is done. His goose is cooked. He has done too much wrong to the French people to hold their trust and to hold their vote. I mean, the farmers are out and about still, I believe, going after him. there's been a bit of a back off when it comes to the European Parliament at this time, but in France, they're still protesting hard. I saw them turning some government minister's house into a field the other day. That was quite funny. However, you look at COVID, you look at what he did to the French people during COVID, and everyone was angry. I've got some friends that work in Disneyland who, I will say this, blamed me every time they went into lockdown because I was in France the day before two of their lockdowns. So anytime I turned up, they're, oh no! but they are very angry. They are very upset. They are fed up with this posturing from these people. And it's not going to win them any votes. We're just seeing Natalie there have one hell of a fit.
I hope she's all right. Conversation we're having here. Literally, it could be the death of Natalie Chale. You guys can't see it, yeah. But hopefully we're not going to cut to her, but she's literally dying off cam here, and we're watching her. And Ben, we shouldn't really be laughing and chuckling, but we are. It's quite amusing to see her suffer like this.
I'm okay. I had to mute my microphone. I just had an absolute coughing fit, so I've got tears running down my eyes. So it wasn't about Macron. It was just about
sure?
My cough. I'm back, guys. I'm back.
Just take a moment, Nat. Just come. Hold yourself. It's okay. We can wait.
Yeah, I'll put it back.
I'm trying to make a serious point here, and she's just in the background going,
it's just stolen your thunder. Yeah, it's very unprofessional of her. Very unprofessional to choke like that on air. Disgraceful behavior altogether. Yeah. But listen, maybe I'll wrap this up just in case she starts spluttering again. But thank you very much, by the way, for bringing this one to their attention. And as you rightly said, this is about political posturing. First and foremost, and be under no illusion, Macron doesn't give a damn about the farmers. He doesn't give a damn about women or women's rights. He doesn't give a damn about babies. He doesn't give a damn about anything except Emmanuel Macron and his potential future, whatever's left of it. So, his goose is cooked. I think that's the best way you could have possibly put it. So, massive thanks to you, Ben,
for chasing dissent.
Yeah, we'll be with Ben tomorrow night. Strangely, he's invited both of us onto their podcast tomorrow night. It should be an absolute blast. That's Chasing Dissent on YouTube. So please support him. Support the guys. Him and John are doing a fantastic job there. And hopefully we'll see y'all tomorrow night on YouTube and Chasing Dissent. So there you go. And that, I don't know where that came from. That was a French accent. I don't think so. So we're going to take a... I think it was a little hint of Mandarin Chinese. So it was, my accents are awful. But anyway, bear with us. We've got to take a headline break. We're going to recompose ourselves, recalibrate, and we'll be back with more news at the other side here on TNT Today's News Talk.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Who knew that we owed Hunter Biden such a debt of gratitude? Hunter testified before the House of Representatives today that his serving on the Burisma Board of Directors at $83,000 per month wasn't part of some elaborate political corruption scheme. No! Hunter's a humanitarian. Hunter did it for us. He was there to counteract Vladimir Putin. Leaving aside the fact that boards of directors have absolutely no role whatever in geopolitics, even in Eastern European nations, the idea that Hunter was serving on that board, which he could offer no expertise, had no experience in the industry, the idea that he was doing it to contain Vladimir Putin, that's beyond ludicrous. Hunter, put down the crack pipe. Pick up your paintbrush, because you actually do have some talent as an artist, and that seems to be a much more profitable grift with all the money laundering into your artwork than getting these gigs thanks to your father's name and then having to kick 50% up to the big guy. Maybe play to your strengths, Hunter, and stop embarrassing yourself, son. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for today's News Talk, TNT.
When I had my heart event, close to 4 years ago, I was at the gym, thought I deserve a coffee, and thought I'll top up with fuel, ordered a coffee. But while I was pumping fuel, I started to get chest pains. Then it got worse and worse and worse. So then I was leaning on the counter thinking, yeah, something's not quite right. So then I went to wait for the coffee, and that's when it really, really hit. And Joy just, mouthed, do you need an ambulance? And I remember nodding. I wasn't even thinking about a heart attack. I just thought, something is seriously wrong with me here. So when the cardiologist came to see me, she informed me that I'd had what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Bit of a shock when someone says, you know, you nearly died. Everybody should be aware of all the symptoms of a heart attack that women can have that aren't typical of the shoulder pain, the right arm pain. I go to the gym, I do yoga, Pilates, I swim, I go on bike rides, and yet I still had a heart attack. You just don't know, it could be you.
The conversation continues with Rick Munn and Natalie Cheel on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. You can pick up the phone and talk to me and Rick. He did try and say, I'll do the talking, because he was frightened I was having going to have another coughing fit. But I will get through the next 10 minutes. I will prove him wrong and I will keep talking. You heard the advert there about a woman having a heart attack. And there was an article in the Daily Mail yesterday. Why are so many young people having heart attacks? They have seemingly healthy lifestyles, but all these people suffered heart problems. And as it carries on, it says a number of factors are to blame, including poor diet, obesity, a sedentary lifestyle, an increase in the number of young people developing type 2 diabetes, smoking and alcohol, Rick. But no mention, funnily enough, of one thing. One thing stands out that apparently it's got absolutely nothing to do with these heart attacks. What do you reckon of this story?
It's got to be climate change, surely, or inflation. Yeah. It couldn't possibly be anything else that's been stuck into people's arms by the billion over the last, 4 years now, or 3 years since they've been rolling these injections out. I am very much of the same opinion as you. You know, every time someone dies these days, the first question is he jabbed? It was the jab. We don't know that for a fact, but let's be honest about it. You know, there's a massive upspike in excess deaths and massive upspike in young people having heart disease that just so happens to coincide with the mass rollout of these mRNA jabs. We'll never know exactly how many people are attributed to it, but I have no doubt in my mind, Natalie, it's played a huge role in it. But I also believe, as the article actually points out, when you think about today's kids and young adults, okay, obesity's at a higher level than it's ever been at. People's mental health is at a lower point than it's ever been at as well. People fall into cycles of depression. They can get chronic anxiety. They overeat. They become sedentary, more self-conscious. It's a really bad downward spiral. And you mix all that in with unhealthy choices in your life. And yes, I do believe we're an unhealthier generation, for example, than the generation that was growing up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, even into the 80s and 90s. So that plays a part too. But I think when you mix everything together, you stick those jabs in there, you stick lifestyle, stress, money stress, worrying about the end of the world, World War III coming, the constant fear porn, self-image issues because of social media sites, online bullying, offline bullying. Mix all that in together. It's not good for the ticker, It's not good for the ticker.
But what we want is an investigation. I so agree with you, because the problem is, like you said, anyone now, if you say someone's had a stroke, someone's had a heart attack, even when I said last year when I was hospitalised because I got a bleed in my eye, and do you know the amount of people that went, oh, you've obviously been jabbed. How many jabs have you had? And I'm like, you should check my social media. I don't, you know, and I'm, for those people, I know he won't mind me talking about it, but my ex-boyfriend had a stroke a couple of weeks ago, and he hasn't had any mRNA jabs. Nothing to do with that. I can tell you that would be a whole lifetime of drinking and smoking, and he was 63 years old. So the thing is, when I say that, and instantly everyone would be like, oh, he's instantly jabbed. So we've got to be careful, but we also need an investigation. There has been a massive uptake of younger people having heart attacks, strokes, all of these conditions. And obviously these articles are trolling us, because every single comment in the Daily Mail basically said, how are they baffled? Why have they just gone up in the last 3 years? No mention of myocarditis, atrial fibrillation, pericarditis. So anyway, I thought I'd just mention it because they're doing it deliberately. I think most people know now there is a link to heart problems and the mRNA jabs. So they're trying to cover it up and drip feed us some information, I believe. We've got another story here. Rick, what can you tell us about dozens of police officers have been convicted of crimes, including rape and sexual assault, since Sarah Everon's murder?
Yeah, this is a topic that we've covered on an individual basis here as stories come to light about gross abuse of power by cops across England, specifically across England. But of course, it happens in every police force across the world. These incidents happen, but we've been highlighting them on an individual basis. This is more or less a summary here to say that dozens of cops have been convicted of crimes, including rape and sexual assault since Sarah Everard's murder 3 years ago. Sky News investigates how many police officers been convicted. So basically, the numbers are quite telling. Dozens of cops have been convicted of these crimes. Officers have also been convicted of assault, possession of indecent images, harassment, controlling and coercive behaviour since 3rd of March 2021. Now, listen to this. These figures are coming from only 19 police forces out of 48 that were asked to actually provide details. So less than half the police forces that were contacted were prepared to give details of which officers they had that were caught, or not even caught or prosecuted for doing this. Think about that. Why would you not give that information out, especially if you had a good record? The only thing I can think about it here is, and I'm, you know, I'm just looking at this objectively, is what are they trying to hide here, Natalie? So one alleged victim of abuse by a policeman saying the figures are likely just scratching the surface. So the most damning thing about this is not even so much the numbers that have been provided here, but I'm thinking about the numbers that have not been provided. So almost 20 out of the 48 police forces, in fact, more than 20 of the 48 police forces didn't actually provide any information at all, which to me is a big red flag.
Should be that be legal, though? If we're they're taxpayer funded, the police, and we're paying their wages. How are they getting away with that? Don't we have the right to know which police officers around us have raped or sexually assaulted someone? Other people have got to go on a sexual offender. Others have got to go on a sexual offenders register, but we can't get told if a policeman has beat the crap out of his wife. I don't think it's right. And I do think there's a massive problem. We've spoken about this repeatedly on TNT and on Open Line. It's this kind of mentality of police men and women sticking together. That's it. That's more important than the public safety. That's more important than telling the truth, as long as we all stick together. And a big problem in the police force with people going into it for the wrong reasons. There seems to be a very high amount of domestic violence among police officers. It's like they are bullies in the first place. That's why they're going into the force. And maybe there needs to be a better vetting kind of procedure to get these type of people not there. Because there are a lot of people in the police force, and that's not all of them, by the way. There are obviously some very good police officers. I do not want to tar every single one with the same brush, but there are some awful people. As we rightly pointed out, they've even been convicted of rape and sexual assault, and they are police officers themselves, Rick.
Yeah, the thing is too, Natalie, certain professions will attract certain deviants and certain psychopathic behaviours. So the priesthood, for example, in Ireland, there was no greater abuser of children in Ireland than the Catholic Church. And one of the reasons why these priests were allowed to get away with what they did for so long was it was you never spoke out against the parish priest, or it would never, a child's word would never be taken against the local priest's word. And in fact, many parents said, don't even talk about that. You'll bring shame onto the family for even accusing father this or father that of doing this. It was rife in Ireland. So these guys got away with it. Usually a complaint would be made, and then do you know what happened? They got moved to a different parish. They got moved to a different part of the country, and they just cycled around performing abuse. And again, of course, it wasn't every priest was like that. It was a percentage of priests that were doing it, but it was covered up. So the cops are the same to the extent that it's a profession where, if you think about it, a lot of women don't come forward and report sexual assaults and rape because they think, I have to go to court. Will they believe me? I'll be humiliated. Then they have the added layer of, well, he or she is a policeman or woman, because women can commit these abuses too. It's my word against theirs. Who'll believe me over a cop? They've got the police force behind them. So that has an effect, Natalie, I think, of silencing people or deterring them from bringing it forward. And as this report pointed out, someone said that that they believed that this was just simply scratching the surface, because very many of these crimes aren't even reported in the first place.
Yeah, and I've got a statement here. In response to the data provided, it says to Sky News, the National Police Chiefs Council said forces were working towards a culture in policing where everyone feels they are able to recognise and report concerning behaviour alongside members of the public reporting any worrying interactions with a police officer. It almost is admitting there that that isn't happening at the moment within the force and by the public. People are frightened, as you said, to report members of the police because they just feel like they won't be believed, exactly like they were in the Catholic Church. This has to stop, and the actual people in the police have got to stop backing people within them and the institution just because they're a fellow police member. If they're a wrong'un, they are a wrong'un. You know, you don't have to back them, and that really to me is the biggest issue.
You see, that's another layer to this, Natalie. There's that fear of speaking out. I'm sure there were many people in the church knew fine rightly what was going on with Father so-and-so, or this nun was doing this, because the nuns were just as bad as the men when it came to physical and sometimes sexual abuse of the young girls and young mothers that were in their care as well. Horrific events happened in Ireland. But again, who would speak out against the mother superior? Who would speak out about the local bishop? You know, it would have been the end of their career, that it would have been demonized and ostracized. And I'm not saying, but you've got to understand, it's not easy sometimes when you're thinking, you're looking around you and some people are terrified to speak out because of this oppression and this fear of retribution. That's what causes silence. And that's what these bullies play on, Natalie. They play on people's fear of retribution and fear of speaking out. And that's why they get away with these things for so long.
Yeah, fear is the virus, as we have said so many times here over the last 3 years. It's my time to go. I will be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Carry on listening to Rick at Locked and Loaded. I am Natalie Cheel. This has been Open Line. And go out, have a great day. And of course, bye-zee-bye.